Hello and welcome to another episode of the RevVR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. Today is the Thanksgiving episode, Thanksgiving 2015. It is a beautiful, it's not a beautiful, it's an ugly, rainy, overcast day here in Seattle, Washington. What we're going to do here for a Thanksgiving episode is we're going to talk a little bit about my current industry and where I've landed. But before I do, just a little bit of a history lesson. So back in the 16th century, pilgrims from Europe decided to move west in hopes that they would find the new world to give them a new life. And they pioneered out in hopes that everything would be okay. And who knows, it could have been disastrous. And for a couple years it was. But when they finally had that good harvest, they decided to have and celebrate what we now call Thanksgiving. Fast forward to the 18th century, and again, the call to go west, young man. Manifest Destiny pushed Americans out again to be pioneers into a brave new world, and they went west. West, west, west seems to be the way to go to be a pioneer, to be a to go out into the dangerous world of the unknown and find your future, find your destiny. And so, fast forward to the 21st century, and I have also answered that call to go west. And at this point, I am about as far west and north as I could possibly go without eating Timbits every morning for breakfast. Yes, I'm in the state of Washington. I'm very proud and happy and I guess thankful for my current state, the state of Washington, the state of employment, and I guess I'm very thankful for the state of VR as well. So for those of you who are not aware, we are basically day one of VR or close to it, depending on who you talk to. Day one because VR has emerged out into the consumer world with the Samsung Gear VR finally becoming available online and hopefully coming to store shelves near you this Black Friday. And so I'm very thankful for all of these things. And I wanted to give back. So as opposed to Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving, you get some information from me about the vertical that I landed in. So some of you who are regular listeners will remember that I had a podcast several months back with a good friend of mine, Stefan Pernar from Virtual Reality Ventures. And he and I talked about all the different verticals that virtual reality was going to have an impact on. And one of those was the real estate and architectural vertical. And that industry was going to have a huge impact from VR. And that's the one I landed in. And so who better to talk to about this than one of the guys who decided to scoop me up and make them part of his team, their team, is Boaz Ashkenazi, who, Boaz, what? First of all, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what is your actual official title here with Studio 216?
So officially, I am co-founder and I started this company about 10 years ago with my business partner, Jamie Fleming, and about a year later, we brought in our third business partner, Charlie Chu, and we were all architects by training and landed ourselves into a visualization business serving the architecture and real estate community pretty early on. So I'm kind of in charge of virtual reality and kind of software product related to the business and also business development at this point. But my title is co-founder.
So what does visualization mean? Because I think people have a hard time understanding what exactly this company is doing. What is visualization?
Yeah. So, you know, at the origin of this company, as architects in the early 2000s, as young architects, we were really tasked with developing renderings and animations for our architecture companies. And when we started this business was really a business that turned around and provided services to architects at first and then real estate professionals for architectural renderings, taking space that didn't exist and making it look as real as possible. That's how this company started. And we still do a lot of rendering and animation projects to this day. So any building that is a few years from being built that needs to attract investors or donors or tenants, you know, we will build digital virtual space and let people see what it's going to be like to occupy that space before the building's built.
So, okay, so visualization is, you know, creating these images for folks like architects or real estate agencies. But, I mean, like, how do you determine who our clientele is? Who is our customer?
So in the early days, architects were really our major customer. This was pre-SketchUp, pre-Revit. There wasn't a lot of capacity inside architecture firms to do renderings and do animations. We served that need early on. These days, that's changed. Now, most firms are modeling a lot of the products themselves using Revit, using SketchUp, Rhino, other kind of programs like that. But there is a need for a really, really high level rendering and animation that oftentimes can just not be executed inside a firm. You know, they're spending their time designing, and we're really producing images at a quality level that's more on the marketing and sales side. So a lot of times these days, our clients tend to be real estate professionals, brokers, developers, people that are building sales centers, you know, other kinds of content that's a little bit different quality than just the quality of renderings that you see when you're trying to make design decisions.
So let's talk a little bit about sales centers, because it's been kind of a crucial part of what I do. Is, you know, you guys wanted to expand into VR because VR is a way to deliver the content you were already creating, but in a, you know, a new future tech method of delivery. And so this is being delivered a lot of times in what they call sales centers. And so these sales centers are, in your words, what would you call, what is a sales center?
Yeah, a sales center really is a retail experience for consuming architecture. So a lot of times the classic sales center is when you buy a condominium and you go in and there's a model in the middle of the room and there's renderings up on the wall and there's videos that are playing and you have a salesperson there, kind of walks you through the floor plans and takes you through the product, shows you the materials that are going to be in your kitchen. And you look at all this stuff and make a decision if you want to buy that condo. Oftentimes, like sometimes in timeshare scenarios, you know, you go into these sales centers and there's large models of the units and the pool and all the different things that you're trying to assess. Is that something that I want to either buy or lease? And so what's interesting about it, though, is that the experience of a retail sales center is really interesting. From the minute that you open that door, the mm-hmm. way that the salesperson, you know, comes up to you, the space itself that you're in, the models, you know, there's a really interesting dynamic in sales centers and in architecture in general in terms of scale. Like being able to see that model in the middle of the room and that kind of locate your little apartment mm-hmm. in that model
right.
and then see a rendering on the wall that's a first person perspective. And so the magic of VR and MR and AR is that you're going to be able to create digital experiences that extend that sales experience inside sales centers.
Right, because one of our taglines here is experiencing the unbuilt environment. And so when you say experience something that's not been built, how do you do that? And in VR is that natural evolution of what you have been doing for the last 10 plus years to now here's this ability to actually build it without building it. And it's kind of difficult. I've had a hard time explaining it to people, but, you know, and which is one of the reasons why this podcast episode is so important is how do you experience something that hasn't been built? And VR gives you the ability to do that. But where do we get our stuff from? Where do our assets come from? How do we build this unbuilt environment?
So, you know, a lot of times we are getting design direction and information directly from architects and interior designers. So for the most part, you know, we're not designing these spaces, though oftentimes, you know, we're being asked to pull out our kind of design toolbox, but you know, for the most part, we're not. But what we are doing is taking design direction from professionals and creating these environments. The beauty of VR is that there's so much presence. Like it's one thing to build a rendering that looks like a photograph, and we do. And people look at it and they're like, "Oh my God, I can't believe that looks like a photograph."
Mm-hmm.
But to watch a person that's never put on a headset before experience the design that they created is incredible. And you've seen that firsthand. We've brought architects into this office and seen them. And it's impactful because they can get inside their designs. They get inside their head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that for a client, too, that is trying to understand, gosh, what is this floor plan going to look like? And unlike architects, they don't have the same capability to get inside a floor plan the way an architect does and understand what that floor plan really means.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to put a headset on them and land them inside their future kitchen, super impactful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've had, we do a lot of demos here in the office. I mean, we have people come in all the time, and I feel like each time is another... there's another door of opportunity opened because now we've put somebody else, you know, we've exposed them to VR for the first time. And we've had people come in and be a little skeptical. And by the time they walk out there, you know, where do I sign? Where do I sign? And that's really important. You know, one of the things that I think I want to convey in this podcast, and this is going to get to you and I were on a panel at CVR 2015 here just a month or so ago, and we were on a panel with other people in our space, two other gentlemen, and we were talking about the challenges, the struggles, the you know, the results of using virtual reality in this space. And I don't know about you, but I kind of felt like we were saying something completely different than the other two guys were saying. We're using VR as a medium with which to deliver content we've always delivered, but just in a more advanced and technological way than before. And our clients are, you know, coming back and asking for more, and we're using the... We're not starving startup here. We're actually making money off of VR. And as soon as you say that sentence, people's heads explode because, well, nobody's making money in VR right now, but we kind of are. So I'm wondering what your takeaway from sitting on that panel and hearing two of our peers saying it's a struggle, you can't make money in this space yet. What's your take on that?
You know, I thought that panel was interesting to sort of kind of put it into context. You know, the other two panelists were from two different construction companies,
mm-hmm.
big construction companies, and they were using VR as a way to help their clients understand what the issues were going to be like in the spaces that they were building. And oftentimes, you know, those issues might be, you know, things that were designed but are in conflict with what one of the disciplines is doing. So let me give you a classic case. A classic case, architects designing a space, and the structural engineer is designing columns that need to hold up that building. Mm-hmm. And the electrical engineer is building, you know, pipes, and, you know, the mechanical engineer is you know, building other kinds of, you know, pipes to carry heat and so on. All those disciplines sometimes are not communicating exactly how they should be communicating.
Right.
And sometimes you get into a space, a real space,
yeah.
and you walk in and you're like, oh, that's where the column is supposed to go? And unlike mechanical systems, columns can't move once they're built.
Right.
And so what's interesting, though, about what that contracting company was doing was they were identifying all those conflicts
mm-hmm.
using VR before anything got built. So you can get inside and say, oh, my gosh, you know, that is not going to work. So we better fix it now, saving lots of money. Now, what was the challenge that they had is that their clients aren't ready to see the value
mm-hmm.
in right. the VR that they're producing. So as a result, they're building it all on spec for free.
Mm-hmm.
Now, eventually, will they be able to fold that into their fee structure? Yes, I'm sure. But right now, because it's so early, they're experimenting and trying to figure this out on their own. We, on the other hand, are trying to build experiences for sales centers, for example, that are helping salespeople close deals, and they are helping close deals. So
right.
like there is just like, it's just immediate mm-hmm. gratification. It's like put the VR headset on people, sign the lease, sign the you know, the condo or whatever the
right.
property is, and it's real. And as a result, they're willing to pay for that value.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just really early for some companies, and they're not really understanding yet how to charge for what they're doing.
Yeah, it's a big challenge because, you know, it seemed like they were looking for using VR to save money. And that's yeah. one value. But then the other value is, how do we use VR to... because in some ways, even though the content that we're selling is real estate architecture, we're actually more in the marketing side of things.
Definitely.
It's kind of this weird hybrid crossover kind of multi-discipline content that we're creating. But with this strong focus on giving architects and giving these real estate agencies the content that they've always wanted and probably will for a long time. We're just using VR for that.
Yeah, and I think that the big difference also is that some of these other firms are using VR to help them make decisions. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that I'm really, really interested in is building these VR experiences and really, you know, thinking deeply about the entire experience from the minute that they walk into that sales center and the minute mm-hmm. they put on that headset. And it's more than just the space that we're creating. Even though, you know, we're committed to making that space look real and, you know, have a lot of presence and all those things, it's bigger than that. And it's about everything that they do the minute that they put that headset on. And so for me, UI and UX is just as much about experience as the architecture.
So let's talk about that. UI and UX, those are terms that have come up in multiple conversations that we've had over the course of the last couple months. You know, I think you've got some insight, something that you wanted to bring up in terms of direction for that.
Yeah, I think that one of the interesting challenges that everybody is going to face, not just people in our vertical, is how you move through and experience these environments. You know, the typical way that we've been pressing buttons and sliding menus in 2D mobile space is not going to be the same in VR space. Mm-hmm. And it's on all of us to try to figure out what that looks like and bring that same kind of simplicity and sensibility that we've now felt for many years in the mobile space. And I think that that's a huge challenge, but one that I'm really, really excited about trying to figure out. And I just, you know, happen to be trying to figure this out in the architecture and real estate vertical, but it's something mm-hmm. that everyone is going to need to work on. And building that elegant interface, I think, is going to be one of the real key ways that the public is going to get brought into VR in big numbers.
Yeah, we need to have something where people feel comfortable, people feel at ease, and they don't feel like it's overly complicated. And we, as we've been building these VR experiences for the sales centers, that's a huge component of how we make our decisions is, what does the interface look like? What does the menu look like? What does the UI look like? Is it too complicated? Is it not giving enough features versus giving enough options? It's too much. It's not enough. And we don't have the right answer yet. And we're still trying to pioneer this. We're still trying to, you know, because that's one of the fun things about it is it's still the Wild West and there are no rules. And so what will win out? And, you know, it's very possible something dumb would win out, and then it's, you know, something elegant, as you said, I think it's a good word to put it, might win out. And so UI is constantly on the forefront of these conversations, and I think that's you know, we need to be the ones to figure that out before, you know, yeah. other people do.
Absolutely.
I really think it's one of our challenges. So you know, what else in the VR space is exciting for you? What's your take on, because you were able to go to Connect this year with me. What's your kind of take on the current state of VR?
Well, there's a couple things that I'm really excited about. One is room space mm-hmm. and Vive and being able to walk through property and architecture using your feet and not necessarily a game controller only. And I think that figuring out how to minimize the tethering of the devices.
Cut the cords.
Is something that I think is going to be hugely beneficial. But, you know, it doesn't mean that we have to walk a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I think that a lot of people forget is that you may not need to take a lot of steps, but just enough steps to add to the presence. So I'm right. definitely interested in that. I'm also I'm really interested in some of the things that are happening in the entertainment space using narrative mm-hmm. and understanding how storytelling in a way that doesn't, you know, make you feel sick. And there's huge challenges in that entertainment space of how to take what already is a really compelling medium using editing and cutting and all the other techniques that filmmakers use, and how to bring that into VR. So I'm always kind of looking for narrative examples that are strong, you know, when I go to these events. And then I was actually pretty taken by touch when I went to Connect.
Yeah.
And the reason why I was not necessarily because, you know, how cool it was to play ping pong, and it was mm-hmm. fun. It was more so the kind of relationship that I was able to make with the avatar that was coaching me on how to play ping pong,
mm-hmm.
and just seeing his head and his hands floating, but the way that audio contributed to that experience and making me have a personal connection with him. And so I'm really, really, as I think about the work that we do here, I'm really interested in the ways that audio can contribute to the experience.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of talk recently, especially since a lot of us came back from Connect 2, and, you know, that combination, for some reason, of having hand controllers and that social interaction, that verbal communication, those two things in something as silly as that sandbox, that toy box of bat a ball or to tear apart a toy, there's something hugely compelling about how simple it is, but look at everything you're getting all at one time.
Yeah.
I'm having a conversation with a floating head, and I can see my hands and pick up stuff. Simple, but very, very important.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And more important than I thought. And what mm-hmm. was funny, and I've told this story to some other people, is that, you know, the guy that was coaching me was probably like six rooms down.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he was in the building, mm-hmm. but, you know, and so when we were done, I walked over to where he was to introduce myself, because I kind of felt like after 15 minutes of playing ping pong, like I had made a connection with this guy. And like we did a little fist bump, and it was like, yeah, I know this guy. And it was just a floating head and hand. So it kind of mm-hmm. proved to me that connection and relationship can be made independent of the kind of visual nature of that avatar.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't,
Speaking of avatars, are you the kind of person who, in a social experience online, virtually, would you want to be you as an avatar? Or would you want to be a Tyrannosaurus Rex? Or, I mean, what would you want to be as an avatar?
You know, I really struggle with that. I've got some good friends that are developing avatars for VR. And, you know, some of them are cartoony, and, you know, some other friends are building ones that are more realistic, and I definitely don't want to be like a large dinosaur,
mm-hmm.
or like, you know, a Martian, or like, you know, just something odd. I definitely, you know, want my avatar to be human,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not sure how real it needs to be. You know what I mean? It could be abstract.
Yeah.
It could be abstract, but I'm still kind of looking for an example that really resonates with me.
Yeah, my kids were watching, the reason I asked the question, my kids were watching Toy Story this weekend, and I just, looking at them modeling these toys, it's just, you know, Woody is human-ish. You know, it looks good, but it's not, it doesn't have to be perfect because it's a toy.
Yeah.
And so I like that kind of hybrid, kind of caricaturized, cartoony, but human enough that you know it's still me.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, well, you know, I mean, I know we're, you know, focused on VR right now, but I'm also really intrigued by MR, and especially because there are use cases where I could be talking to a real human and seeing that real human as digital things are happening. And so, you know, I know that's a little different than the avatar model, but I think it's still something that's real. It's going to happen soon, and it's something to think about.
I think that, you know, this industry, this vertical, is really going to benefit from the concept of augmented or mixed reality, because so many things that we do are collaborative. And so when we build our VR experiences, we have to give people the ability to have that mirrored view and see what the people in the headset are seeing. And so with an MR or AR experience, we have multiple people kind of all sharing this experience, seeing each other, communicating in the same room or remotely, and being able to share this experience. You know, the huge difference between VR and AR is that in VR, you have to build the environment. And in AR, the environment exists and you lay over top of it with whatever it is you want to call it, holograms if you need to. What does that look like? How does that translate into what we're doing here? I mean, you obviously see the benefit for mixed reality.
Yeah, I definitely do see the benefit. I think it's going to come a little later than some of the things that we're seeing with VR, but not that much later. I think it's going to start. I think it's going to come soon.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely on my mind. And so, you know, I come back to the UI UX discussion that we just had. And I think that it applies to MR and AR just as it applies to VR. So it's top of mind for me.
Absolutely. So having gone to Connect, you got to see and meet a lot of the, you know, and we'll just keep using that word, pioneers of, you know, the VR space, and seeing the clear passion that a lot of these people have. Where do you think this is all heading? I mean, I know I watch TV and I watch the news, and I keep waiting for that big piece of news. And there's these little nuggets every once in a while that say, "Oh, VR is coming, VR is coming." But I mean, what's your take on the current state of where media sees these pioneers and where they're heading?
Well, it is Thanksgiving, and that means Black Friday.
That's
and
right.
So, you know, we're on the edge of a wave that we're about to catch, a big one. And I think that with Samsung Gear VR kind of landing on Black Friday, and then the hopes of all these other headsets landing in 2016, we're about to see a huge, huge amount of energy and dollars being put into this industry. And I really want to kind of acknowledge these groups of people that have gathered for those first two Oculus meetings, Connect 1 and Connect 2. And I was able to go and meet a lot of those characters who are super passionate, you being one of them. And I want to support that energy. And I don't want those early pioneers to be forgotten, because what's going to happen is that there's going to be a frenzy that's around VR in the next couple years. And, you know, there's a lot of innovation that's happened early on, and I want to be able to support that. And I, you know, part of the reason we're so excited about this podcast is that, you know, we see this as one of the early podcasts that we'd like to, you know, actively support moving forward.
Yeah, you guys have been very supportive. I mean, one of the things that I you know, when looking for a new employer, somebody in the VR space that I can grow with, is I didn't want to lose the ability to keep my connection to the community. It was very important. And you guys were more than gracious and said, no, we want to support this. We want to keep that going because you see value in it. And you know, thank you again, Thanksgiving, because it's really important that I get to keep doing this, and that you guys have been, you know, more than supportive, but not just because you feel like you have to, but because you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really important.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, you know, as I look back on these other tech innovations, you look at the internet and the rise of the internet, and you see some of the earlier pioneers of VR in the 1970s and the 1980s, or even at the early 90s, and there was some really amazing work that had happened. It was just a little too early, and so now we're kind of finally, you know, experiencing, you know, a lot of the innovation that those guys and research that was done back then. So I'm really excited about the future, and in these next couple of years are really just the beginning. But now the public is finally going to be getting a taste of what we've been tasting for a while.
We've made the comparison to the, you know, the old, you know, the 70s, like homebrew clubs and things like that, and, you know, innovators like, you know, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they saw what was coming and they were there and nobody believed them. And it wasn't until, boom, this onslaught of, you know, PC clones and the Apple and the Macintosh and all this. It's like, holy cow, they were right. 20 years later, they were right. You know, what now? Now they do documentaries. Now there's 17 Steve Jobs movies in, you know, coming soon to a theater near you. You know, what will happen to the podcasters, to the innovators, to the VR, you know, the crazy ones, as Steve Jobs would say? What happens to those guys? And at the very least, doing these podcasts helps to document those early days, and then, you know, our great grandchildren will be able to go, oh, he's that guy who said that, or she's the one that built that thing. That's important.
Absolutely.
That's really important. Well, I think that puts a nice little bow on this. I think this is a good conversation. The world gets to understand what Studio 216 is about. The people behind it, our motivation, and that we are passionate about VR and the future tech and everything that's coming down the pipeline. And so, normally this would be the point where I would say, if you'd like to contact us and learn more about, but just contact me, folks. I'll steer you in the right direction. So, as usual, if you want to, email me at the normal reverendkjr@gmail.com or find me on Twitter, reverendkjr. Does Studio 216 have a Twitter?
No, we do. Okay. Yeah, at Studio 216.
At Studio 216. So I expect to see a huge following coming after this podcast. I want to see everybody. That's your homework for tonight, kids, is to go out and follow Studio 216 on Twitter.
You can follow me too, at Boaz Ashkenazi. So I'm also posting on interesting things that I find.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Well, Boaz, thanks. And of course, your partners are actually chilling out here listening in. So thanks, guys, for being quiet. Appreciate it. All right. Well, thanks, Boaz.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all very much for listening.
All data and information provided on the RevVR podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. This podcast makes no representations as to accuracy, completeness, correctness, suitability, or validity of any information discussed. Comments and views expressed on the RevVR podcast are the sole opinions of Reverend Kyle or his guests and are not necessarily shared by Road to VR or its affiliates.